And committee, the 2670, the amendments have a problem, but we may have them later in the meeting this morning, and so and go back to that one. We'll start with have a public hearing on House Bill 2661. And Janet, can you give me a down on
2661? Okay, there it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2661, the original bill, had to do with the Department of Transportation requiring them to ensure that Klamath County College, Community College, had access to a specified highway. So we're not discussing that bill. That was Representative Garrard's bill. That's not necessary any longer. But Representative Greenlicht worked with the Department of Transportation on amendments to Representative Garrard's bill with Representative Garrard's understanding. The Dash 1 amendments are at your place with the Dash 1 staff measure summary. They do replace the bill. The amendments replace the bill and authorize the Department of Transportation to arrange for the removal of a vehicle from the right-of-way of a state or interstate highway and require ODOT to notify the sheriff or appropriate authority upon removing the vehicle. Then it requires that the agency notified by ODOT to take authority for the vehicle and to provide for the required notice and hearings related to having possession of the vehicle and disposal if no one claims it. Under current law, state police may authorize tows of vehicles that are in the right-of-way of state or interstate highways. They patrol the highways and tag vehicles to be towed. And until last year, the state police also delegated their authority to the Department of Transportation and has been advised that they cannot do that. So this is the fix for that. Doug Tindall is here from the Department of Transportation, and there is a change that will likely need to be made in the amendments you have. So this will be the discussion today.
Okay, so we're going to have we'll need a dash two then before. Yeah. Representative Greenlight.
Yes, if I might comment, and ODOT will be here to comment as well. I went on a ride along with the Comet, which is something I would recommend others you do if you haven't had a chance to do it. It was really quite fascinating. But during the ride along, I noticed several abandoned cars on the freeway. It was I-5 between downtown Portland and Tigard, and there were, I think, four abandoned cars. When I inquired about the abandoned cars, the driver told me, well, he wasn't sure what happened. They used to have the authority to tag and tow them, and that authority was taken away for some reason or another, that they still tagged them to identify how long they had been there. There was one car that was on that sort of triangle, I forget what you call it, between an entrance and the freeway itself, and it had been there for 3 weeks in this odd place. So I came back and inquired, and it turned out what had happened is the state police had always given ODOT the authority to tag and call a tower. That ODOT never takes possession. The state police has to manage it, or the city, in transferring that and getting the possessionary lien that we were talking about done. But an attorney general's opinion said that the state police didn't have the authority to have ODOT do it, and they had to withdraw the authority from ODOT. And when we got back and checked with the state police and ODOT and the city of Portland and others, it turned out that a simple fix to this would be what is in the Dash 1 amendments, not counting the first paragraph of those, and it simply will then authorize ODOT to tag it, to call for a tow, and then to notify the state police that it's been towed for the state police to take over. And everybody seems to think this is a good solution. So we have that in front of us. It turns out the Dash 1 amendments you have in front of you should not have the bolded line 9 through 13. It's unnecessary and it adds confusion. The rest of the bolding in it does what's necessary. And thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Representative, for taking care of it for us. But could I have Doug Tindall, please? Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. Doug Tindall, State Maintenance Engineer for the Oregon Department of Transportation. I always love working bills in Janet Adkins committee because she gave my testimony. my apologies for the for not having the draft right. I was a little overzealous in what I told council, and council has so often informed me that it's really handy if you know what the hell you want to do when you go down there and ask for a draft. But that seems to be something that's too complex for me to get my mind around. So my apologies for not having the amendment exactly right. I think this will bring back what had become a common practice of allowing ODOT to tag and tow vehicles. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? No questions? You're going to let Cliff, you're going to let him off real easy.
Okay. I'm working on a different question. Representative's on.
Thank you, Doug. Is there any other, anyone else to testify on 2661? If they're not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2661. And the House Bill 2388 is just a tap tap.
Okay.
We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2388. We'll close the hearing on House Bill 2388. So we know we've got no one here though. Our representatives are here.
Well, we can tap.
Yeah, we can tap. I think it'll go. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 3615. And Janet, give us a rundown on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3615 would require that when the Department of Transportation transfers jurisdiction over a state highway to a local road authority, that the Travel Information Council retains authority over existing tourist-oriented signs. These are not billboards, but they're the small tourist directional signs on the highway. Requires the department to identify such signs and to notify the Travel Information Council regarding pending transfers. It also requires the receiving jurisdiction to agree to protect the signs as a condition of the transfer. And then after that, after the transfer occurs, any new signs would have to be approved by the road authority. Any new ones of these directional signs would have to be approved by the road authority. So it's taking care of the existing ones, saying that they need to be transferred, and giving the new road authority approval over future signs. We have members of the Travel Information Council and the Lodging Association, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Scott and Cheryl.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Scott West. I'm an executive director of the Oregon Lodging Association, located in Portland, Oregon. And thank you, Janet, for that fine summary on the bill. That's what we're here to. Very simply, that's what this bill is about. As identified in earlier discussion, these are tourist-oriented and logo signs that are the blue boards that you'll see along the state highways across the state of Oregon. Represented on those boards are a number of different types of entities, lodging, restaurants, you'll see gas, RV parks, attractions, but a number of folks that are in the tourism industry itself. So this is a very important sign program to the state's tourism industry. As mentioned earlier, this bill establishes a very simple process just to preserve the integrity of the existing program. If indeed a state highway is transferred to a local jurisdiction, this bill merely says that the existing signs will be identified. That identification will be the Travel Information Council will be notified of that. Then there will be a written agreement between ODOT and that jurisdiction that those signs will be protected and that they will carry on under the same guidelines as they are currently. What it will also do is, in the future, if there are any other new requests for signs on those transferred jurisdictions, then as those requests come into the Travel Information Council, then those requests will then go on to that new jurisdiction for their consideration. I think the important thing about this is that it really makes the jurisdiction transfer and the protection of those signs as part of that agreement between ODOT and the local road authority. So, again, a very simple bill just protects the existing program. Again, a very vital one to the state's travel industry. And with that, I'll take any questions or turn it over to Cheryl for any questions, too.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Those signs, that these are the ones that have the restaurants. As you're going down the freeway, you'll have all the restaurants at the next exit, and then pretty soon you'll have lodging owner signs there. These are the ones we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Gribsko. I'm the executive director of the Travel Information Council. You're exactly right. They're also on the off-interstate routes, and we also sign for historic attractions and other kinds of tourist attractions, as well as the gas, food, lodging, and camping.
Do the people that advertise on these here pay anything for that, or is that?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, yes, they do. They pay an annual fee for those.
Is there any question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. These are the blue signs primarily you're concerned with,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, that's controlled kind of by the feds, though, isn't it? Because the big blue signs are on the interstate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, they're totally controlled by the federal government.
Okay.
Yes.
So then your part would be the smaller sign once you've gone off on the road on a regular highway? Because we can't do any transfer of the interstate.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, these really are taking into consideration off-interstate routes because I don't think ODOT's ever going to transfer full access controlled freeway types of roads to other jurisdictions. So I agree.
Well, I guess my question, do we have some of these big signs on other highways other than the freeway, I guess my question is?
Those big signs are only on those kinds of freeway boards, but we have boards that are similar to those on wood posts that are on off-interstate routes.
Okay, and those?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I have another question. How come we can only put 6 advertisers on one sign on the freeway when we get all this freeway space, mm-hmm. and we could put up other signs? Because in Woodburn, we have 6 or 7 restaurants, including the golf club, that would love to have their restaurant up on the dang sign and pay for it and get money. Can you please tell me why
yes.
the feds are...
Yes.
Holding us by the throat on that one.
I can. Actually, Oregon was the state that got them to go to 6. It used to be 4. And the federal government does not see these as integral signs in the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices. They see them as motorist services. And so in their view, there needs to be some logos out there that allow the motorists to know that there are services, but they deem anything bigger than 6 to be advertising, which they don't want to do, and they also don't think that anybody would be able to read all the logos if they did that. So we've never been able to get more than 6 on a board on a federal level, on a national level.
Could we contact our congressman or somebody to do this? If they don't think that seeing an Arby's up there is advertising, they're nuts. I mean, excuse me, that was a follow-up. What do they think that is?
They think it's a motorist service. It's listed under specific services in the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, and frankly, that's what gives us what we've got today. And so allowing us to have 2 food boards going one direction would be seen as advertising to them, and they would not allow that.
One final follow-up.
Yes.
And I also understand, because a year ago last September, I traveled the entire United States, and this mm-hmm. just absolutely drove me nuts. You'd see a great big sign and have 3 food places on there, but they wouldn't allow the other 3 places to be used by a lodging company or... Mm. There's a mix in there somewhere. They have some. So how could you help me try to figure out who to contact back there to Scott to try to work on this? Because we have an opportunity to advertise a little bit, or not advertise, but put other signage up and get some money for those people doing it and provide a real service for these others, because we're not providing a service for Tukwila Golf Course.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, I'll work with Cheryl, and we will get back to your office with regard to exactly who we need to speak with.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a fee associated with this, so when there is a transfer, does the fee follow and go to the local jurisdiction, or does it stay with you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, the fee would stay with us. That's how we are funded. It's all self-funding, and so the sign program, we're able to go back and maintain those signs with those fees.
Okay.
Representative Gilman.
What are we doing right now? We've made transfers already of some roads, and I assume there was a sign on them. What I'm getting at, why are we doing this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilman, this is to ensure that that written transition process does indeed happen.
So am I assuming it hasn't happened?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilman, yes.
Any other questions? Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Doug, do you have any input in this? And no dog in this fight. Okay.
Good idea.
Yeah, we just closed the public hearing. It's got a work session, too, no? Yeah.
And so forth. Mr. Chair,
Representative Beyer.
Do the cities and counties have any problem with this? Is there
anyone from the city here or county? No problem, huh? Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3615, waiting Representative Forrest to get here. She's been notified?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And we just called her up for the next bill.
Okay. And so we're waiting on another representative for the next one, huh? But we could stay on the ease for a few minutes until Representative Hunt or Flores show up, and then we'll finish our business.
Could we just pass it and let her show up?
Some of my bills, I just assume that.
We do have some silly federal rules, you know. Give us our highways back.
Well, I think that was a good thing. But, I mean, what happened was we had signs. I was a part of the application. I said, okay, we can have this. But, I mean, your point that they won't allow really as many as there are. Well, but that's because there only are five there.
Right. Well, why wouldn't you allow them to put a little golf course in there? Because they say you can't combine this with food, because then it's advertising.
We'll open the work session on House Bill, let's see, which one, 3615. And Cliff, you got a question you'd like to have answered? We'll,
I will when it gets up.
Get, okay. Cheryl, could we have you?
Mm-hmm. Huh? Okay. Yes.
We'll get it on the record.
Real quick. I understood there was a combination they would not allow, even if there were blank spaces. And what is that combination they won't allow? But dealing with lodging, food, and attraction.
And I'm on record?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, you are not allowed to have more than four logos, boards, more than four logo boards at any given interchange, at any given direction. So in order to have a tourist attraction legend where you already have four logo boards, that has to be in combination with another legend.
And this board with a blank space, okay, on this one here
That's
as an
right.
example.
Yes.
If they were all food,
yes,
there is either a lodging or something else you're not allowed to put in this blank space because these are all food. What is
That's
that
correct.
Other one you're not allowed to combine with the food?
We're not allowed to put any other legend, period, because there's only allowed to be two on a board. So what you have there is lodging and tourist attraction. That's the two legends we're allowed.
Okay. So there's no way that's what bothers me. Well, we can't fill
yeah,
up. Yeah,
I know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you,
Cheryl.
My pleasure.
Got to be a law.
We'll work on it.
Okay.
Yeah,
Representative Flores is here. Did you wish to give us some testimony, too, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And for the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm state representative from House District 51. And in regard to House Bill 3615, this is a good bill. It's pretty straightforward, and I would appreciate you moving the bill to the floor. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any questions of the representative? Looks like there's none. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your consideration.
The chair would entertain a motion.
Work session. We are in work session.
Motion.
I move 3615 to the floor with a repass recommendation.
Representative Greenlick moves that we move House Bill 3615 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Ryan, you call the roll, please.
Representative Zahner.
Yes.
Representative Beyer.
Yes.
Representative Dienfelder.
Excuse.
Representative Gilman.
You're so quiet.
Gilman.
Aye.
Representative
Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to put that on the consent calendar unless somebody wants to carry it.
Does Representative Flores want to carry the bill, or shall we put it on the consent calendar?
Move it through quicker.
Okay.
I don't have any objection.
Representative's honor moves that we place House Bill 3615 on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. And let's see. Now we got one open public hearing on House Bill 3583. And let's see where we're at. Representative Hunt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. Sounds like the Clackamas County table today with my colleague from just across the freeway, Linda Flores. In the previous bill, this bill 3583 is actually a bill that's been adopted in at least 14 other states. It's in process in five other states right now, so some of them may have adopted as well. But it would require that when you have to use your windshield wipers, that you also would have to turn on your headlights. Basically, a public safety issue. It's been supported by public safety agencies in a variety of other states. And I can provide you a list. Well, I'll just go down the list. New York, North Carolina, New Jersey, Maryland, Illinois, Minnesota, Delaware, Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Alabama, Maine, and Connecticut. And it's one of those things that public safety agencies have supported. It's also one of those things that does not have a fiscal impact. If anything, some of the fiscal impacts that have come back from other states show that it actually ends up being a revenue generator because those who are cited for violation actually ends up being a revenue generator. Certainly no negative revenue impact. But really an opportunity to say when there are rain or sleet or snow conditions and windshield wipers are in use, that is also a good opportunity to turn on headlights and add that additional public safety benefit. So there's actually a version of this in the Senate that does not appear to be moving, I think primarily because it's just not a high priority for the sponsor of the bill. But I think it's a real opportunity to do something relatively small that has a beneficial public safety impact and no net revenue impact, at least in a negative way on the state. I would urge your support.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Zahner.
Yes, I did. I would have been a contributor yesterday to the state fund. I was driving home, the sun was shining, shower came over, and I turned on my windshield wipers, and I thought of your building, because I looked at it yesterday and thought, now if I forgot to turn on, because I have a pickup and you got to turn the lights on. They don't come on automatically like John's car. I could have been cited, and I'm thinking, that's not right. That's not fair. And I, as an adult, I ought to know when it gets dark enough or when it's not safe enough. I need to turn on my lights. I should be able to make those decisions. So I struggle with the bill from that
today.
And so I'd like to hear your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner. In fact, some other states have specifically adopted regulatory enforcement provisions that make it clear that you cannot be cited simply for that. It's enforced in some places, like the seatbelt law is, where if you are pulled over for some other reason, that could be an additional citation for you. But it's not, at least in the one other state where we looked at the specific regulations, it's not grounds for citing you simply for that. It's only an additional issue if you're pulled over for some other safety reason or some other violation.
Okay.
So unless you were speeding, which I'm sure would never be true of Representative Zahner, then you would not have been cited in that case.
There's speed law going in. I'm okay.
Representative Gilman.
Representative Hunt.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure that this maybe would contribute to safety. I have a car that the lights come on no matter when now. I mean, sometimes they don't go off. I don't know why that is, but anyway. And so I have a dead battery occasionally. But anyway, I just think this maybe is common sense, and I'm not sure that we need to legislate common sense.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilman, that actually could be said of many of the things we legislate in this building. I think that you and I might assume they're common sense, but not everybody shares your wisdom, Representative Gilman.
I've been told that common sense has no place in this building.
I spoke in favor of it. I need to be called common, so I need instruction, I guess.
Is there any other questions? Thank you. Representative Beyer.
Thank you. When you proposed this and did your research, I'm assuming, do you know what the fine would be in the statute?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, my understanding is that is something that is set separately as it goes through the administrative process within each agency. Just looking at Connecticut, for instance, fines of $10 to $20 for a first offense were the place they started. So it's not intended to be a revenue generator. It's really focused on being a public safety issue, and has proven to be so in the experience of those states.
Okay, follow up. It would appear that in ours, this would make it a Class B felony with fines up traffic violation with fines up to $300. Is this in line with what you were thinking it should be?
do you have, Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, you may have an additional sheet. I've got a staff measure summary that doesn't. Are you looking at the fiscal impact, or are you just looking at the text of the bill?
We were looking at others.
Oh, in terms of comparison.
Yeah, I mean, there's like two different sections where these are referenced. So,
Mr. Chair.
Janet, maybe you can help clarify that.
It's not printed in the bill, but 811.520 is where the penalty is, or the level of violation is set. And it's unlawful use or failure to use lights. And it's a Class B traffic violation. And the maximum fine for Class B traffic violation in another statute, is set out in 153.108, and that's a maximum $300 fine. The typical ticket would be about half of that, because they don't give you a ticket for the maximum.
Thank you, Janet. Representative Greenland.
Representative Hunt, basically you're amending, as I understand it, you're amending a statute that talks about the fact that lights need to be on when limited visibility conditions exist. And the statute doesn't really go on in very much to explain that. And it is obvious when it gets dark, it's dark, and there's a safety thing about an hour before sunrise, or an hour after sunrise, an hour before sunset. But what my understanding is, and perhaps you could comment, is what this is trying to do is to simply provide one instance that defines, adds clarity to an ambiguous situation about what limited visibility is. It's not creating a new statute. It's simply providing some clarity to a statute that's already there. Is that your sense?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlink, I think that's a good point. In fact, looking at the Oregon Driver's Manual, there's this phrase that says headlights are required between sunrise and sunset or any other time when, due to poor light conditions, persons, vehicles, and other objects are not clearly visible at a distance of 1,000 feet on a straight level, unlighted highway, roadway, or street. Getting back to Representative Gilman's comment, that's difficult, at least for me as a driver and a person, to interpret, clearly visible at 1,000 feet. I don't know if you're like I am, but it's difficult to gauge 1,000 feet, what exactly that is when you're driving. I think the goal of this is to set a clear, everybody understands if you're using your windshield wipers, you turn on your headlights. That's fairly clear, and so I think it is trying to set a benchmark for clarity, really aimed at the intent of the existing statute, but just providing one more clarifying definition of that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Could I have Stan Porter, please?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Stan Porter. I'm from Transportation Safety Division of ODOT. And Troy is busy today at a DUI multidisciplinary conference up in the metro area. And so I'm here to present testimony. Our concern with the bill, we know it's an attempt to improve safety. Our concern is, how do you get the message out to the people of the state of Oregon, for those of them that their lights don't ordinarily come on? And the other concern is for those visitors to the state of Oregon, how will they know about this? Will there be a requirement for signs at the borders letting them know so that they have an idea, since all states don't have this bill? Senate Bill 652 is exactly the same language. They had a hearing held in the Senate Transportation Committee, and they're amending the bill right now to have the infraction go from a Class B to a Class D, and intend to bring that back within a week or so. We are required by law since 1997 to do a public information and education campaign for using lights during limited visibility conditions and on two-lane roads, and you have a copy of this is what the color version looks like of what the billboards, bus sides, television ads were like. We also had some radio and print ads that were out to try and do that. We've been doing that for the last 5 years. Some increase in the headlights have been noted. We did a survey back in 1997 where it ranged from anywhere to 33% to 80% of the people were using headlights during times of limited visibility. I have any other questions you might ask, I'd try to answer.
Stan, did you say that they are working a bill over in the Senate side
yes.
now?
Yes, yeah, it's Representative Brown, they did hear the bill, and Chair Metzger decided that they needed to pull the bill back, amend the traffic infraction from a B to a D, and then they were going to bring it back in and work, have a work session on it.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Greenwood.
Yes, Dan, did you bring a picture of that billboard at the border that lists all the other places where our traffic laws are different than, say, the state you're coming in from? I mean, I assume you could just add this to the...
Chair Brown or Representative Greenlake.
Same billboard.
There is no real billboard. There are specific signs for certain laws, like a headline on law for motorcycles or a helmet law for motorcycles or a safety belt sign for the general driving public. If it was warranted to let people know, then that would be an additional sign at different places so that people would know about a certain law that's different here than in other places, and that's what those signs at the borders have been designed for.
If I may follow up. But certainly you don't go through all our traffic laws and pick out the ones that are different, say, from Washington at the Washington border and then from California to the California border and have this. I mean, we have different traffic laws. Yes.
Chair Brown, Representative Greenlake, that's right. We just do the unusual ones that are the major type fines. For example, there are only 20 states that have motorcycle helmet law, so when people come through, they need to know that we are one of those states, and so that they put their helmet on. We also want to let them know that we are one of the states that has a mandatory safety belt law, so that's why we put just the major ones at the borders.
Thank you.
Representative Zahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Stan, over in the Senate, were their concerns kind of our concerns over here, too, or was there anything different?
Chair Brown, Representative Zahn, I have a copy of the hearing report that was done over there, and let me go over it real quickly and see what it was. Their main concern was safety. There weren't very many questions at all, and the biggest thing was that the chair decided to pull it back and just change the infraction.
Okay, thank you, Stan. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you, Stan.
Thank you for hearing.
Okay, no more witnesses. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3583. And
Mr. Chair, we still want to amend
Committee, we still don't have the amendments on House Bill 2670, so we'll have to carry that forward to either Monday or Wednesday. Is there any other business for the committee?
Thank you, sir. Could I ask a question?
Certainly.
In another committee, I wasn't sure what the issues were on what you could do with a conceptual amendment. 2661 is a clear cut. Conceptual amendments would be taking a piece out of that amendment. I wonder if that, apparently sometimes you can do a conceptual amendment and pass the bill, and sometimes you can't. Is that...
What I've heard is that Ramona does not like conceptual amendments. And
period.
She doesn't run this place.
That's true, Mr. Chair. And in addition, Legislative Council does not like conceptual amendments, even combining two amendments that they want to have you pass out one final set at a final work session.
Well, the environment we got on one message from the LC, we couldn't. And then the next bill, it came along and said, "Oh, that was all right with that one."
We just checked.
The rules are made to be broken.
Rookies,
yeah.
They're not doing very good in educating rookies.
Can I add one?
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, I did have a brief email back and forth with Legislative Council this morning about this amendment, and she said she wanted to make sure on it. So, but anyway, they do not like us to do that.
It's a simple issue, so it's not really.
Yeah. Any other business? Any other comments? If not, Representative Gilman?
No.
We are adjourned.